This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons. We're going to talk about a few of the biggest stories from across the state this week. But first, if you're watching live right now, please let us know where you're watching from down in the comments. If you're watching on Facebook, if you have any questions, have any comments to throw out there, we'd love to get through those throughout the show. But first, earlier this week on Wednesday, I was down in Mission, Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley, where Governor Greg Abbott joined 9 other Republican governors at the southern border. Now, it's no secret that the border has been a place of real contention, especially since President Joe Biden has taken office earlier this year, as we've seen a surge of illegal aliens invading across the southern border. But with that has come a lot of criticism for how the governor has handled or mishandled the situation as well, his actions and as well as inactions on it, something that he's taken heat for from his Republican primary opponents, from conservatives, from people concerned about that. And so when he was set up to take this press conference, a lot of the expectation going in was, well, what new plan is Governor Greg Abbott going to announce to stop the surge of illegal aliens, to actually stop and secure the border? Now, that's not exactly what happened. You see, just moments before the governor and those fellow GOP governors took the microphone at that press conference, the Republican Governors Association released a list of policy proposals. Yeah, 10 policy proposals for Joe Biden, who they had sent a letter to a few weeks ago, hadn't heard back from. They said they want to meet with him, and now they're putting out, they say, well, if he won't meet with us, well, we'll put out our policy proposals on our own. Now, look, I don't know. I don't think that I would count on the Joe Biden administration right now listening to Republican governors. They've certainly shown that they're not willing to secure the border. But instead, what we've seen is that these governors, including Governor Abbott, are doubling down. Take a look at this clip from the start of the press conference to see what I mean.
Now on to what we are here for today. Obviously, we are at the border here in Texas, and we're here to talk about border-related issues. And let me just start out by making a very clear point, and that is President Joe Biden has caused a humanitarian crisis and chaos on our border. All Americans saw exactly what happened in Del Rio, Texas just last month, and we know that that chaos will be repeated unless and until President Biden takes action. 26 of America's governors have worked together to develop specific actions that Biden can take immediately to end the crisis on the border that he has caused. We, all of us, asked the president for a meeting to visit with us about this.
There's no word yet as to whether or not the president has read through these policy proposals, whether he's going to implement any of them. If I were a betting man, I'd say he probably won't. So that leaves, in the meantime, what are Governor Abbott and the other Republican governors, especially those who represent states across the Mexico border at the south of our country, what are they going to actually do about it? Now, Governor Abbott did lay out 10 things that he says that he has done in recent weeks, in recent months, things like signing laws to crack down on smuggling and human trafficking, things like surging DPS presence down at the southern border. But what was left unanswered was what he will do if the Biden administration continues down this trajectory of failing to actually secure and turn away rather than just process these illegal aliens. What's the plan B, right? If President Biden doesn't listen to you, what are you going to do? You know, he's actually been asked by some of his primary opponent, specifically Don Huffines, has really championed this cause of closing down ports of entry with Mexico, who he says has been a bad neighbor, in order to sort of stop the flow of illegal aliens and ultimately use that as a negotiating tool. I asked Governor Greg Abbott if that was an action he would be willing to take. Here was his answer.
Suggested closing ports of entry with Mexico. Is that an action that you would be willing to take as governor?
We will take any and all action that needs to be taken. Understand this, however, and that is, most, if not all, of the illegal immigration that is occurring is between the ports of entry. That is why we are having surge resources between the points of entry, because our job is to, our focal point is to try to reduce people who are crossing here illegally.
Of course, any answer that isn't yes, I will do that today, is essentially no. And we've seen since that was on Wednesday, we've seen that that hasn't happened. Interestingly, the governor did say several weeks ago, I guess it was last month now, said that he would close some points of entry with Mexico, only to reverse his decision just hours later. Why? Because the Biden administration wouldn't cooperate. He blamed the Biden administration. Now, with thousands of illegal aliens continuing to surge across the border, remains to be seen what actions Texas is going to take while the federal administration continues to fail. Moving to a different topic altogether, a different battle, if you will, I've got Jacob Asmussen here, a senior reporter with Texas Scorecard, to talk about a few stories that are going on in Austin, in other parts of the state. But first, we've got an interesting story led by Robert Montoya and some other writers here that have been following it this week about school boards versus parents. So it's no secret we've seen in recent months parents becoming, I think, more active and more involved in school boards as they see some of the stuff their kids are being taught, whether it's critical race theory, whether it's some of these COVID restrictions in schools. And at the same time, we've seen a lot of these school board meetings get kind of out of hand, where you've got people getting arrested, people like this. And now we've got this new letter from the National School Board Association calling parents who protest, essentially going down there to try to have a say in their children's education, calling them angry mobs and comparing them to domestic terrorists.
Yeah, like you said, Brandon, we're seeing this across the nation. Parents are getting more involved in their child's education, which is good news. But the bad news is you see these school boards across the nation fighting back, acting like parents have the gall to have a say in their child's education, right? And we've seen an avalanche of stories, like you mentioned, the National School Board Association released this letter calling these protesting parents domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
Now the Biden administration is getting involved, with Attorney General Merrick Garland announcing that he and the FBI are going to be investigating these types of quote violence. Right? And so very troubling to see that school boards and the federal government itself is retaliating against parents. And the bottom line, like you said, why are parents up in arms? Why are parents enraged?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're enraged that their kids are being taught racist ideologies, right? Sexually explicit materials, and these controversial, unhealthy mask mandates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love this quote by conservative radio host or a pundit, Ali Beth Stuckey, that kind of summarizes this situation. She said, quote, "Parents have exposed some of the most morally grotesque and sexually perverted material in their children's schools over the past year, and the response from the media and this administration has been to say the parents, not the curriculum, are the problem." Think about that.
Yeah,
that's certainly true.
You talk about on the opposite side of that spectrum, just last week you had the Education Secretary Miguel Cardona saying parents are not the primary stakeholders in children's education. And, you know, it's we laugh a little bit because it's just so bizarre. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this is something that we've seen really ramping up, that the left has used in education. And now it's very telling to see them actually going on the offense on this.
Right. They're becoming more brazen, yeah. Like you said. The federal government, school boards, more brazen. And, hey, actually, we control your kids, not you. And that is not good, especially when you see what's happening across the world. Places like France, they ban homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
The government encroaching more and more to try to take away parental rights over their own children.
And Texas isn't immune from all this. We've got a story up where Robert Montoya attended the Texas Administration of School Boards conference earlier. I think it was earlier this month or last month, and discusses a panel they had actually called Uncivil Discourse: Managing Disruptive Comments and Complaints in a Time of Unrest. A lot of the talking points, they say, are echoed in that letter that we just mentioned, right, about essentially parents are kind of the nuisance there, right? But interestingly, they are also teaching these school boards and administrators how to delay responding to public information requests. So you've got parents that are out there saying, okay, we'll go through the official process. I'm going to put in a Public Information Act request. asking for information about the curriculum or information about this or that. And essentially, you've got these administrators being said, well, okay, here's how you slow walk.
Yeah, like you said, when we have that article on TexasScorecard.com, you have these school board associations mm-hmm. teaching these school administrators how to hide from parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just absurd. You have one of the panelists saying, people have learned to use the public information requests as a weapon. Again, parents simply trying to find out what's going on in their mm-hmm. children's school. Oh, well, you know, these school administrators are basically saying, no, parents, you get out, shut up, don't ask what's going on, mm-hmm. you know, just let us control your kids and don't ask questions.
Well, and perhaps if transparency is a weapon to them, maybe that says more about what the school districts are, are hiding than anything. One school district in Central Texas, in the Austin area, Pflugerville ISD, that is being pretty open, I think, about the way it leans politically right now.
Yeah, so as all of this is happening across the state, across the nation, you have Central Texas School District, Pflugerville ISD, posting on social media this week, celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, mm-hmm. and they said, today's spotlight is none other than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the self-proclaimed socialist New York congresswoman, a pro-abortion, anti-Semite, very concerning history, anti-Semitic comments, a radically pro-abortion. Mm-hmm.
And an admitted socialist.
Absolutely.
I don't even know. Are there any Texas connections? Is she from Texas? I don't think so,
That's
right?
exactly what some citizens pointed out. They said, okay, so you celebrate her, but what about Ted Cruz, our Hispanic senator from Texas? When is he getting celebrated? No response there, of course.
Who are the... she's not the only person that's been recognized so far by the district as people to celebrate for Hispanic Heritage.
Yeah, they've also celebrated Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, radical pro-abortionist, saying that she is a, quote, positive influence for our kids, as well as Cesar Chavez.
Of Cesar Chavez, so, of course.
A lot of good role models for kids.
Yes, I mean, I think that's an excellent point, right? When is Ted Cruz or any number, right, of someone who might not be on the far left, right? Are they going to be recognized? Maybe the district will now, I don't know. You know, maybe they've been forced to by some of these parents. Speaking of Austin, we've got an interesting story. If you're in Austin, if you know the area, this weekend is the second weekend of the Austin City Limits Music Festival. This is a two-weekend sort of music festival that happens every year. I think it was canceled last year, but you know, it happens every year annually. And there's actually kind of an interesting story here about the role that big money can play when trying to move through local government, specifically in a city like Austin that has been so heavy on a lot of the COVID-related restrictions. And yet we've got this festival where, you know, people are out, people are about. And how does that happen?
Yeah, so you have local officials in Austin. They've set up their arbitrary COVID rules, you know, restricting events here and there, but they're picking winners and losers. And the winners they're picking happen to be big corporate events. Mm-hmm. And the losers happen to be, of course, the local mom and pop small businesses. You have them allowing Austin City Limits, this massive corporate-backed music festival. Hundreds of thousands of people come out, over 100 performers, right? They're allowing that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And yet they canceled local events like the Bat Fest, like the Pecan Street Festival, at the last minute. Denying them, and yet, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in a park was okay.
Yeah, actually, our video team here at Texas Scorecard put together an excellent video explaining that. Let's go ahead and play that video for you.
We are in the middle of the Austin City Limits Music Festival, a two-weekend event that features over 100 performers and hundreds of thousands of attendees coming through the city. Although this well-funded corporate-backed event was able to secure the proper permits, other festivals have not been so lucky. Back in August, just 72 hours before their events were supposed to begin, both Bat Fest and Pecan Fest were denied permits. Roadway Production, the producers behind Bat Fest, posted about the event on Facebook, saying, "We've been strong-armed into canceling our event. All indications from the city of Austin were that we had all of our ducks in a row. Now at the 11th hour, we have been denied our permits and forced to cancel. We are shocked and devastated, as this is a huge financial blow and harmful to our reputation as event producers. Roadway Production also calls out the hypocrisy in a post saying, "This weekend in Austin, 20,500 soccer fans are expected to fill the Q2 Stadium to watch Austin FC. We are glad those events are taking place, but it's unfair to punish small mom-and-pop businesses like ours. It is not okay." While Austin bureaucrats will cancel smaller festivals, these unelected officials have shown that they will change the rules when larger corporations are involved.
Well, another big story, speaking of big money, right out of Austin, is a familiar face, familiar name maybe to some folks, from out of state, that is pouring a ton of money into a ballot proposition here in Austin. Explain the details there.
Yeah, so the situation in Austin right now, you've got citizens petitioning against their local city officials over the police department. Now, this traces back to last year. The city council defunded the Austin Police Department by up to $150 million, a third of their budget, right? Mm-hmm. Since then, violent crime has exploded in the city. The city has the most homicides in a year in the city's history, right? Killing spree on the streets. Citizens have responded. They've organized a petition to restore funding to the department, to restore police officer staffing to the department. And that is up for a public vote now in November. And in the middle of all that, suddenly, out of nowhere, New York billionaire George Soros, right, the far left godfather, appears in the Texas capital city. He donates $500,000 to a political organization that's opposing the citizens, right? Citizens are trying to restore the police, restore police officers to the streets. And yet George Soros now appeared to stop that effort.
George Soros, known as not only a billionaire, not only a far left billionaire, but somebody who does give a lot of money to far left causes. We've seen him do this previously in Texas with some of these races for judicial races, district attorney's races, things like that. And now to see that he's pouring money into this Austin campaign, I mean, What does that tell you about his motivations there?
Well, it's raising a lot of questions. The citizen group Save Austin Now, kind of the leader in this effort, they put out a press release this week saying, why do this? Why continue the city on this trajectory? Why unleash more chaos, right? We're trying to restore safety and restore order here, and yet why are you opposing that?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of questions raised there. Similarly, to move on, a little bit of a segue, kind of a rough segue, but similarly, there are a lot of questions in the Texas legislature as an election bill fix has been filed and passed in the Senate. Now, a little bit of background on this. People remember you had a month or two ago the Texas legislature passing finally the big election integrity bill, right? And does a number of great things, going after mail ballot harvesting, going after a number of these ways that fraud is committed in these elections. But there was one small problem. The bill as it was signed actually reduced some of these penalties, reduced the penalty for illegal voting. It actually used to be a felony, now it's a misdemeanor. You had grassroots organizations like Grassroots America, We the People, and others raising the alarm on this. And finally, you had Governor Greg Abbott add it to the special session agenda. Well, then you had Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick say, great. And then Speaker Dade Phelan say he wasn't going to pass it, which infuriated a lot of conservatives for sure. He said he wasn't interested in relitigating the bill. Those are his words. But that may have changed. This is kind of the power of grassroots pressure here. That bill has now been referred in the House to the House Select Committee on Constitutional Rights and Remedies. This is a committee that has essentially been used by Dade Phelan for things that ultimately he wants to get to the floor. So far, we haven't seen a hearing scheduled for that bill yet. The bill has notably already passed out of the Senate. We've only got a little over a week left in the special session, but remains to be seen. I mean, there's a lot of issues. I mean, we could spend the whole time talking about issues that haven't gotten across the finish line. But certainly, this is an important one.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I look at this situation, and the word that immediately comes to mind is circus, right? Why has it been so difficult over the past, nearly year to punish cheating, to punish voter fraud. Mm-hmm. Why has it been so difficult in the regular session earlier this spring that this supposed top priority didn't get taken care of or didn't get addressed until the very end of session, and then they didn't get it done? Mm-hmm. And then now over the summer, we've had to have consecutive special sessions where we still didn't get it done, yep. and then they finally did get it done, but they reduced the penalties, like you said. And so now we're back, it's still not done. Why has it been so difficult to simply punish people who are trying to cheat in an election?
Well, and you could say that for a number of these issues that we don't even have time now to go through that on the special session agenda. But, you know, I think it is a testament, though, to the pressure that grassroots have been placing on lawmakers, right? I think left to their own devices, they would have been gone in June. We would not be here for a third special mm-hmm. session, looking at a fourth special session, unless the governor and some of these lawmakers felt like they had to do something if they were going to stand a chance in the next elections.
Absolutely. And I think that point needs to continue. You know, if citizens are concerned about elections in Texas being secure, they need to continue to contact their officials, because it's clearly shifting mm-hmm. The situation at the Capitol, and need to continue that to get this thing over the finish line.
Yeah. On a final note, you know, speaking of those electoral consequences, you got an interesting endorsement coming out this week where former President Donald Trump endorsed businessman Kevin Sparks over State Senator Kel Selger. Kel Selger has been in the Senate for a long time, has been a constant thorn essentially in the side of conservatives. For Dan Patrick, has been lowest rated Republican as far as on conservative ratings, has been opposed to taxpayer-funded lobbying, was opposed to property tax reform a couple years ago. And even as recently as this week, voted against fixing the penalty issue on this elections bill. So now you have former president coming in and endorsing him, following that up by endorsing Pete Flores as well for another one of those Senate districts. And so it'll be interesting to see how involved the Donald gets in some of these state races.
Yeah, absolutely. Surprising to see him choose this race, right? Mm-hmm. But like you said, Selger has been that constant contrary voice, opposing his own party, opposing things like property tax reform and election security, you know. So does the Donald have anything else up his sleeve? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see if he continues this trend. Thank you so much for joining, Jacob. And I wanted to let folks know that we've got a new series coming up. Actually, we've got two new series I'll mention here. We've got one new series of podcasts that's going to be going up today, this afternoon, at I think 2 p.m., I believe, on redistricting. Me and Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent here, are going to be taking a look at some of those maps for Congress, Texas House, Texas Senate. But first, we start this first episode with a conversation with Jeremy Kitchen and Federal Election Commission Chairman Trey Traynor, talking about just an overview of the process, right? What goes into redistricting, a little bit of the history on it. If it's a topic that you think is maybe too complicated to start to learn about, something you don't think you can get too into, I really encourage you to listen to this podcast. It's going to break down a lot of those technical things for you, and it's a great introduction. We're going to have that out this afternoon. Plus, next week, okay, we're going to have our new limited series of uncut gubernatorial interviews, okay? We're interviewing, we extended invitations to all of the Republican candidates for governor, and we got Alan West, Chad Prather, and Don Huffines, who all came in the studio recently to sit down, have a chat for about 30 minutes or so about a wide range of issues. If you're somebody who doesn't know who to vote for yet, I think you're going to want to check out these conversations. So to give you a little bit of a timeline here, we're going to have Alan West up at Tuesday at 2 p.m. Chad Prather's going up on Wednesday. And then you can check out Don Huffines on Thursday. You can see them all at TexasScorecard.com or our YouTube or Facebook pages as well as be able to listen to it anywhere. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, etc. So be sure to check those out next week. And another matter of housekeeping here, Conservative Leader Awards. We've got early bird pricing going on for one more week for our Conservative Leader Awards. Those happen December 4th in Irving, Texas. So if you want that discount, you've got one more week to get it at TexasScorecard.com/CLA2021. That's TexasScorecard.com/CLA2021. And if your age is 18 to 25, or you know somebody who is, and they'd be interested in joining us here at Texas Scorecard for a semester, we're taking applications for our spring, summer, and fall 2022 fellowships. You can find more information about that program as well as the application at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. I want to thank everybody for watching today. Some quick shout outs here down here. I can see we got Tiffany tuning in from Deer Park. Always great to have Tiffany on. Michael tuning in from Dallas. Joyce watching from Belton. Aaron watching from the DFW Metroplex. Marion from Rossville. Again, if you have any questions, anything we said maybe doesn't make sense or something you want some more information about, you're watching this later, please feel free to reach out to us or leave a comment here. We'll try to get to some of those. But for right now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week. So check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.